in terms of the publishing landscape and the book landscape, I think the work that IBPA is doing in the future of publishing looks really bright. Today, I think people are going like, okay, this is a business. We're educating ourselves. We know what we're doing. We're starting publishing companies. We're starting hybrids and traditional companies. And those new models are rivaling the traditional counterparts. And I think that's the goal.
That's my guest today, Brooke Warner. She's a publisher of She Writes Press and Spark Press and currently is the chairperson of IBPA. Today, I'm going to be talking with Brooke about the subject of hybrid publishing and independent publishing in general, which is totally appropriate considering that you are listening to Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA. Thanks very much for streaming in. I'm an independent publisher and I'm your host, Peter Goodman. Inside Independent Publishing comes to you from IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association. IBPA's mission is to lead and serve the independent publishing community through advocacy, education, and tools for success. For more about IBPA and how it can help you be a better publisher and sell more books, whatever kind of publisher you are, go to ibpa-online.org. You can also tweet questions and comments to me at the handles at Peter Goodman or at IBPA. Now, let's get started. Brooke Warner should be a familiar name and face if you are tracking what's happening as independent publishing evolves and gets stronger and stronger, because she's right at the front lines. She's a writing coach and a publishing expert, an experienced editor and book acquirer, a pundit and advocate through her articles in PW, her TED Talk, and most recently her position as board chair of IBPA. Brooke is not only commenting on the future of independent publishing, but she's one of the key people making the future happen. She's the author of several books, and to name two, Greenlight Your Book, How Writers Can Succeed in the New Era of Publishing, and the forthcoming The Magic of Memoir, Inspiration for the Writing Journey. It is great to be able to speak with her today. Welcome, Brooke.
Thanks for having me, Peter. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Well, let's talk first about hybrid publishing. First, what is hybrid publishing and what is your involvement in it?
Hybrid publishing is basically any kind of publishing business model that is not wholly traditional and is not wholly self-publishing. And so it resides in this middle ground, and it is different from both self-publishing and traditional publishing in its business model. Or I guess I like to say that it's mainly different from traditional publishing in its business model, in that hybrid publishing is a author-subsidized business model. But it's different from self-publishing because reputable hybrid publishers that are doing the work of being a publisher are not really allowing authors to self-publish. You know, they should be functioning as a full publisher, weighing in on everything from editorial to cover design to sales and marketing. So it's this in-between space that we have been working at IBPA and beyond to identify and to help sort out, because in a lot of ways, even though it's not a particularly new business model, it is one that is not well defined.
And it's not been fully embraced, I guess, by the traditional publishing community either, or by the media who cover publishing.
It's an interesting thing, because I actually think that the traditional space thinks it's a really good idea. My general impressions is that hybrid publishing in theory is well embraced by the traditional publishing world. The problem is that there are a lot of people who are saying that they're hybrid publishers and they're not. What they actually are is service providers. And so I think there's a lot of skepticism in the traditional space around who actually is a hybrid publisher and what does it even mean. And then on the flip side, you have skepticism from the self-publishing side saying, well, how is what you guys are doing any different or better than what we're doing? And so I think there are certainly factions in, and it creates this complicated landscape. But from my vantage point as a hybrid publisher, we are trying to distinguish ourselves for a number of reasons. Number one is that we're not trying to be a traditional publisher. And I always say that, you know, I have two imprints, She Writes Press and Spark Press. We are operating outside of the traditional space, and proudly so. And then we're decidedly not self-publishing because we are not putting everything in the hands of the authors. They're specifically coming to us to consider us as their publisher, and therefore we're making really critical decisions about publishing for them and on their behalf, just as a traditional publisher would.
Well, would you say that, I mean, like you say, someone could be an author publisher or self-publisher and put up all the money and do it all themselves, but when they go to you, they're putting up money again, but they're getting the benefit of your expertise, and you are contributing to it in some sense as well, financially, or at least with getting better terms from printers so that it's easier for them to get the stuff done and find the professionals to work with and get a good price for what they're doing, as opposed to just starting on their own and not having a clue, perhaps, and getting overcharged maybe by people who aren't even the right people to be working on their project.
I mean, I guess the way I see it is that hybrid publishing is going to vary in cost. There are hybrid publishers who charge the least amount I've seen for a reputable hybrid publisher is somewhere in the ballpark of $3,000. On the high end, you could spend many thousands more than that. So it's the deal part of it, of whether or not you're getting a good deal, I think depends so much on what services are actually on the table. So you certainly probably, at least in the case of She Writes and Spark Press, you'll spend less if you self-publish. One of the things that we talk about, though, is the value of the distribution and the value of this long-term relationship that we're offering to our authors, which is not just about steering them in the right direction and helping them publish a good book, but also being their partner over the long term. Now, we don't actually finance the projects. So I think that is sometimes one of the points of confusion for people, and sometimes where people say, well, if you're not putting money up front, how can you be invested in these projects? It's something we certainly confront as a question that comes up with our publishing programs. But we do have a lot at stake because it's our brands that are on the line. It's our imprints. It's our reputation. We are, in fact, trying to publish books that can go out into the world that we deem to be publish ready. But where we are distinctly different from traditional publishing is that we don't have to meet a particular sales threshold in order to justify publishing. And to me, that's actually one of the massive benefits of our model, because one of the reasons that so many authors are rejected by traditional publishers is because the traditional space is saying, we can't sell whatever number, right? 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 copies. Well, what if you have a fantastic book and you would be very pleased to sell 1,000 copies? You know, that's the space that we are trying to occupy. And of course, some of our authors sell many more than 1,000 copies. But I think it's important to look at hybrid publishing as something that is both disruptive and also that's coming to the world of publishing with a completely different set of metrics and measures of success than what the traditional publishing space can actually do.
Well, I mean, traditional publishers will invest in a book and maybe not expect to make any money at all until a reprint, or they'll rely on subsidiary rights and things like that. They get income well after the fact. Are you saying that you don't actually make any revenue from sales, regardless of how many sales there are, or from rights, say subsidiary rights sales, things like that?
We do, but it's not a high percentage.
Right.
So, and every model is different. And I think that's important for people listening when they're thinking about hybrid publishing and what hybrid publishing is. In our case, we give the authors 60% of their print proceeds and 80% of their ebooks. So it's a high percentage going to the authors. And then we also have Ingram Publisher Services as our distributor. And so of our percentage, we're giving quite a big percentage of our percentage to IPS. So what that means is that we are making a bit, but not very much. And that's intentionally so, because the whole model is, if you're going to risk on yourself financially and your book does really well, then you should get that windfall. But we do have a bit of a stake, but it's just not a huge stake. What I think that allows for, and other people might disagree with this to some extent, is a bit of a democratization of the list. You know, when I look at the list, yes, I'm saying, okay, this book has X potential and this book has X potential. But, you know, at a traditional publisher, which I know very well because I worked in traditional publishing for 13 years, they would say, okay, these are the books that we're going to invest everything in and we're going to spotlight. And the books at the bottom of the list really do get neglected. And so we don't have to be, you know, bound by those kinds of limitations. I can talk to my authors about, you know, this is what can happen with your book if you, you know, put X number of publicity dollars behind it. It just gives the authors a lot more transparency and a lot more agency to, you know, to be able to have the outcome they want versus in traditional publishing, it's the outcome the publisher wants.
Those are great points. And it, I guess it points up the fact that there are many deals and different types of contracts being offered by hybrid publishers. What do you think are some of the contractual elements that a someone looking at a hybrid publishing contract should pay a special attention to or be cautious of?
That's a great question. I mean, people have different concerns about publishing contracts, of course. I think it's super important that you look and see who's retaining the rights. How easy is it to terminate the contract? Those are big points because I think where authors get really needled, I guess, by the contracts is where it's not easy to get out of the contract or somehow the publisher owns their rights and then later they want to do something with that, with their content, and they can't. Certainly looking at the percentages, and we could talk about this a little bit, but the IBPA has done the hybrid criteria checklist, which was one of the big initiatives of the advocacy committee this year, 2018. And, you know, we talk about royalties and, the degree to which hybrid publishing really should only be keeping 50% or less, and that the majority of those proceeds should go to the author. So there are some things in that hybrid criteria checklist that bleed over, I guess, into contract negotiations. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think of other things that would be big red flags for me. I think you really need to have someone look over it and see, you know, in what ways is the publisher conceivably nickel and diming you, you know, hidden costs that might not be as transparent as they need to be. And to be able to talk to someone and ask those questions and have them answered well, I think is all very important in contract negotiations.
A lot of traditional contracts basically give the publishing rights to the publisher as long as the book remains in print. However, that is defined sometimes very murkily. Mm-hmm. Is it easy for a hybrid publisher to divorce themselves from their publishing company?
Well, again, I think that depends on the hybrid contract, right? In our case, our contract allows for the author to simply put into writing that they want to terminate the contract. And within 30 days, then that is a done deal. And the only reason it takes 30 days is because we have to disentangle from Ingram.
Sure.
I purposely think that our or intended, I should say, for our contract to be very author friendly. I don't think all contracts are author friendly, and I also don't think that many authors know what an author friendly contract is.
Is this hybrid space growing? Are there more and more publishers you see sprouting up doing this?
Definitely. And my measure of that is through IBPA, going to PubU and talking to people who are interested in becoming hybrid publishers or who think they're hybrid publishers. But it's also that very experience that led us to the hybrid criteria checklist, because I was talking to people who were saying, we are definitely hybrid. And then they would say things about their business model that I felt did not really make sense, you know, that didn't totally work for hybrid. And we realized that there was no one entity that was defining what hybrid publishing is. And in fact, my own thinking about it has evolved over these years in being a hybrid publisher, because it is a relatively new space. As I said, this kind of business model has been around for a long time, but there hasn't really been any single publishing entity that says we are hybrid and this is what we do until just recently.
Right. And I guess it's still evolving in a way. How has the hybrid publishing products been received by review media? Are you still meeting some resistance there?
We personally, She Writes and SparkPress, have historically met a lot of resistance, and I have met that resistance with my own counter resistance.
I know you led the charge.
So the hard thing is that when I fight for Spark Press and She Writes Press, that doesn't necessarily translate to me fighting for all hybrid publishers as much as I would like that to be the case. And I think the primary reason is because not all hybrid publishers are alike. Not everyone is hitting all of the standards. Not everyone has the quality that the traditional space needs in order to consider them quote unquote traditional, right? I just said earlier, I don't want to be considered a traditional press, but I do want all of the access that traditional publishing has. And so we have been able to break down those barriers, and we now are, we qualify to submit all of our books through traditional means for the trade magazines, right? Like Kirkus and Booklist. Yeah. And
you did have some resistance with some of the prizes though, right?
Yes, we definitely do have resistance with the prizes. So there are awards and contests and also associations that still refuse to see any hybrid publisher for membership or for awards. And that's just because they've drawn a firm line in the sand that says our measure is author subsidization. And if you are an author subsidized publisher, then it's a no. And I have not been able in some cases to break down all the barriers, but yeah, maybe in the long term.
I mean, do you think that that's mostly they're just trying to not be overwhelmed by the, you know, getting 100,000 books submitted to them? By keeping it traditional, they're keeping a smaller set of books they have to deal with every year?
Yeah, I do think it's that. I think it's twofold. I think it's overwhelm and that they don't want to do the work that it would take to assess a hybrid publisher in a real way. So there's that. I also think that it's to a certain degree about elitism. I think there are some of these contests and awards and associations that just feel that as long as they have traditional publishers in their ranks, then they can't be, I don't know if the word is accused or sort of lumped into something that they deem as lesser, which, you know, is kind of a holdover from another era. I think that the books, of course, should be measured on the quality of the books, and they just don't want to do that work.
And it would seem really pretty, I mean, if you're a book professional, it's pretty easy to pick up a book and tell at first glance whether it's a good production or not, a good cover or not. I mean, determining the quality of content might take a little bit longer, but a lot of the things that these contests are judged on, which are superficial qualities, are they're pretty easy to determine. It's unfortunate that there's been so much change at the industry, and once again, the powers that be are so hidebound and so reluctant to change their way of thinking. But anyway, Brooke, I know you've been pushing on this and writing about it and talking about it, and certainly having an effect. So
thank you.
Maybe it's just another couple of years and everything will be just wonderful, as it should be.
Yes, I imagine it will be that easy. Your utopian dream of the publishing future.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, I should know better. I want to ask you a little bit. You are also the chair of the Independent Book Publishers Association. And you have been for almost 6 months now, I think. Mm-hmm. What is your vision for the future of independent publishing? I don't mean to put you on the spot or, you know, to come at me with a bunch of statistics, but are you optimistic? Are things getting better, or are the things like paper prices and the closing of distribution routes and the shrinking of, you know, bookshelf space, et cetera, are all these making it even more difficult to survive, even though the general, what would you say, the general acceptability, the cachet of being an independent publisher is increasing, but the business is just as hard as ever. And as we saw from the discussion of hybrid publishing, there's still a lot of conservative forces working against change.
Yeah, I mean, I am hopeful. Certainly, I am largely optimistic. And I also think that we are an industry that has a particular number of problems. And I don't know how resolvable they are. I absolutely think the fact that book prices are what they are and that it's so hard to make money at publishing is a ongoing pain point that's been since forever. And that's right, paper costs are going up and we have all kinds of issues around, you know, as wonderful as it is in some ways that Amazon is on the scene and a lot of people credit Amazon with more readers. They also don't have very publisher-friendly contracts and they also mandate all kinds of changes and you basically have no say. I think being an independent publisher is a really, really hard job, clearly, but one of the reasons that hybrid is going to continue to be an attractive model for people entering the space is because it is so nearly impossible to make money at publishing in the way that the traditional folks do it. And the reason that they can do it, of course, is because of their tremendous backlists and their backlist sales are financing the frontlist sales. And, you know, they have thousands and thousands and thousands of titles in those catalogs. I mean, I guess it's both and, you know, I am optimistic, but I also am a realist and I write a lot about my critiques of the industry. I see it pretty clear-eyed. I think it's important that anyone who wants to go into publishing get a real education. I think I have a benefit from having spent those 13 years in traditional publishing, but even when I came out of that, I still didn't know so many things that I've since learned being an independent publisher. But I do largely feel hopeful for the future. And, you know, when I look at IBPA and see the community of people that we're working with, you know, it's so much about publishing standards, you know, making sure that everybody is doing the absolute best work that they can do and that we are I mean, to some extent, enforcing. I mean, IBPA doesn't really enforce standards, but I think they're when you set a high bar and when you have expectations, in some ways, the trickle down of that is enforcement. And so in terms of the publishing landscape and the book landscape, I think the work that IBPA is doing in the future of publishing looks really bright because you know, if you look back 20 years ago when self-publishing first started, the vast majority of those books were awful, you know, and today I think people are going like, okay, this is a business. We're educating ourselves. We know what we're doing. We're starting publishing companies. We're starting hybrids and traditional companies. And those new models are rivaling the traditional counterparts. And I think that's the goal.
I guess I agree with that. I recently did a podcast with people from Books Inc., the bookseller in Berkeley. And I asked them, well, you're seeing a lot of these self-published, author-published books, do you think the quality has improved over the years? And the blunt answer was no. Mm-hmm. And that was very discouraging after all the work that I know IBPA and other places have done to try and raise people's game. And I don't know if I was listening to someone who was speaking from a lot of experience or was just kind of letting those old prejudices bubble up again. But it does seem that we do have a ways to go. One of the things that is a bit frustrating to me is the still the heavy reliance on the traditional forms of bookselling. Everything from getting our books into wholesalers like Ingram Publisher Services, Consortium Publishers Group West, mm-hmm. and then having to ship a physical book to a bookstore that doesn't have enough space for everything, the whole thing with returns. The reluctance of booksellers to embrace print on demand because of returnability issues and cost issues, et cetera. It seems like the independent publishers, the authors, are very visionary and ready to move ahead, but we're very much held back by a lot of conservative forces. And sometimes it just seems there's a lot of there's the urge to change, but not the means to change because it's very, very hard to change mm-hmm. a whole physical bricks and mortar system, a whole freight system, warehousing system overnight. And there's no incentive for those people to do that just to let a bunch of independent players into the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. I was actually listening to something recently about self-driving cars, autonomous right. vehicles, and they were saying this is going to be a disruptive technology because it's going to mean that we're getting rid of insurance companies and, mechanics and all these things that are connected to the way that we drive and think about cars. And I think publishing is another industry that really needs to rethink how it's doing things. And it's tough because it's so tied into our our dreams and our nostalgia and our fantasies around book culture, you know, and picking up a book and going to a bookstore and a library and all of these things. It's meaningful to people on an experiential level, but it's not really sustainable for the amount of books that are being published each year. I have very, you know, big personal concerns about paper, right, you know, the destruction of rainforests. It's not sustainable given the massive quantities of people who want to publish books and how many books get destroyed each year. So we have to really be on the forefront of thinking about change, I think, in a parallel way to autonomous vehicles. And what that could mean is that we're going to have a different shopping experience, a different reading experience. But I think what's going to happen is we're going to be forced into that space in time.
Well, I hate to say it, but, you know, Amazon has already kind of got there.
Mm-hmm.
They provide an absolutely fabulously convenient shopping environment for the consumers. It couldn't be easier.
Yes, absolutely.
They're responsive. They figured out the whole customer experience, which our industry has not been able to do yet. And that is a source of concern because Amazon is getting stronger and stronger, and there really doesn't seem to be anybody stepping in to offer an alternative solution or even a reasonable amount of competition to them.
I know, and it's interesting because then what you also see simultaneous to all this is a resurgence in bookstores. And if you think about our culture and a desire for, you know, like the slow food movement, for instance, which might be tied into people wanting to have this luxurious experience at a bookstore. So that, you know, one of the things that happens with book publishing in general is that it clashes up against our values.
Sure.
And so, you know, people don't like Amazon and they don't like the coldness of that experience. And yet, you know, we just have so many authors and they take up a lot of resources. So these are big picture questions, but certainly things that I think about when I think about the future of publishing.
Well, let's continue to talk about these things and hopefully see some positive growth and positive evolution in our publishing industry. And Brooke, you're in a great position to help make change happen.
Yeah, I think so. And I appreciate the opportunity to be doing that through IBPA and other means.
Great. Well, we've been talking with Brooke Warner today. And I will put details about all things Brooke Warner on the podcast notes. Right now, the easiest way to find her is to simply go to brookewarner.com. So thank you very much, Brooke. Great talking to you.
Thanks so much, Peter.
After talking to Brooke Warner about hybrid publishing and the future of independent publishing, I got to wondering, with all the varieties of publisher and publishing available today, why do so many people still think of book publishing as some kind of zero-sum game? Everyone seems to want to play in the same sandbox. One with the most toys wins, and if I win, that means you lose. The most obvious example of this thinking is Amazon versus the indie booksellers. For many people, it's one or the other. The loyal Amazoners think of price and convenience and free shipping, and they've stopped going to their local bookshop if they can even find one, because really, who pays full price anymore? And the folks loyal to bookshops, they hate Amazon with an almost unbridled passion. Faceless corporate gouger, Amazon puts good people out of business, deflates local economies, and offers bland servings of what's popular, and if you liked X, you'll like Y. Indie bookshop customers happily pay more because bookstores are everything that Amazon is not. Local, welcoming, and nurturing. But the zero-sum idea comes in elsewhere too, creating huge dichotomies in our culture. Brooke mentioned, for example, how hard it is for hybrid publishers to have their books or authors accepted into certain contests and associations. Receiving personal support from an inspiring and conscientious author taints the book, while the same book receiving financial support from a publisher whose only motive is profit somehow puts it on a higher plane. And then there's the big six or the five or four versus midsize versus indie versus author publisher. Everyone in their own cubicle. And this is so ironic to see this kind of compartmentalization based solely on format, funding, and how many hands actually touch the book before it gets to the reader. It's ironic because books are all about the imagination, about content that can go anywhere and talk about anything, and partake of any culture or idiom. Books are big. It's our industry, its restrictions, its traditions, and its leadership who hold us back. creating those zero-sum games where the winner is pretty much always, guess who? The same folks who won the game last year and the year before. Well, maybe it's not such a bad thing. IBPA, after all, has its industry standards checklist. Its purpose is to make sure your publication meets the high standards of the industry, so it can pass muster of the gatekeepers. But it assumes we trust the gatekeepers and that they are making all the right decisions for all the right reasons. The real revolution in book publishing is probably going to be just that. A revolution, not an evolution. A new way of accessing and distributing content. A new way of retail that delivers the physical book we all love without all the costs and waste of distribution and returns. Amazon has already revolutionized the online retail space. It's probably uncatchable. The physical retail space is, to all intents and purposes, stuck and shrunken, surviving but not going anywhere new. Maybe until the brick-and-mortar environment becomes something totally different, bookselling, at least, will remain a kind of zero-sum game with only one big winner and three guesses as to who that is. Now, to comment on this podcast, tweet to me using the handle @PeterGoodman or @IBPA. Just a reminder, if you're already a member of IBPA, we appreciate your support. Be sure and let us hear from you. If you'd like to learn more about IBPA or are considering joining, check out the IBPA website at ibpa-online.org. I'm your host, Peter Goodman. Thanks very much for listening to Inside Independent Publishing. Keep your nose in that book. And as my bosses in Japan used to say, let's have publishing fun.